This is the SLA Workshop Podcast, episode number 2. Have you heard about the monitor model? Well, let's talk about it.
Welcome to the SLA Workshop Podcast with Joel Sarate, the podcast that will expand your knowledge on how we learn languages and help you become a better language learner and better language teacher. And now your host, Joel Sarate.
Hola, ¿qué tal? Bienvenidos a otro episodio de SLA Workshop Podcast. Yo soy Joel Sarate. Ciao a tutti, benvenuti a questo episodio. Hola, pessoal, bienvenidos. Bonjour a tous, bienvenue dans cet épisode du SLA Workshop Podcast et merci pour m'écouter. Welcome, everyone. I'm again excited to be here to talk about one more topic in the field of second language acquisition. Did I say that right? I think I messed up my English a little bit at the beginning. So anyhow, I'm here. I'm very excited. And today we're going to cover the first topic from the field of second language acquisition. I am Joel Sarate, and I hope that you can find this episode fun, enjoyable, and very useful if you're a language learner or if you're a language teacher, because in the end, this podcast is also to help you become a better language teacher and a better language learner. So let's get started with today's episode. Okay, let's talk about the monitor model, because actually the monitor model is a very interesting model, as you will find out. It has 5 hypotheses, and it is a very important model because in the early 70s, late 80s, when Professor Stephen Krashen brought the concept of the monitor model to the table, it contributed to our understanding and to the notions that we have on how we learn languages. But it also sparked a lot of debate because there were some researchers that would argue that it would be very difficult, if not impossible, to empirically prove through research that the input hypothesis is true. And then I'm going to talk about those hypotheses later on. But the point that I'm just trying to highlight here is that this model contributed a lot to our understanding on second language learning, and also to the debate, and also to our ability to keep researching different ideas that have definitely taken us a long way from the 70s to now. But we're going to be talking about the monitor model on this episode. And before I get to that model, it is important a little bit to just give you some background, because one of the most important parts of the monitor model was that with this model, Professor Stephen Krashen also attempted to explain how we learn languages. And actually, I need to clarify, because part of this model is the differentiation between acquiring and learning. So he attempted to explain how we acquire languages, and particularly through his input hypothesis. He attempted to also give us an explanation for how we put language in our subconscious. Going to talk about a little bit more about that, but it is important to have just a little bit of background. What I'm going to start with is the notion of behaviorist learning, which basically explained learning through a stimulus response scenario, where we provide a stimulus and your response, and this habit of mimicking and analyzing and just repeating what the other person is giving you would create the habit that would eventually become the learning of whatever it is you were learning. Particularly in language, that translated into learning perfect sentences, that we would learn languages by repeating the sentences and mastering those sentences. It's like being a parrot, being a parrot that if you teach them sentences, they can repeat those. And so that was a dominant framework at the time, a predominant philosophy that came from behaviorism, particularly from Professor B.F. Skinner, who was at Harvard at the time. But it's also important to mention that early in the 1900s, Professor John Watson was the one who created the framework for behaviorism. And then Skinner is the professor that we associate more in terms of language acquisition. So if you pick any book that talks about behaviorism, you'll see that the most relevant figure was Professor Skinner, who was at Harvard University at the time. So with that in mind, now you can, in a way, have an idea of why you have the experience of learning a language with all these repeating sentences and just trying to come up with the correct and perfect sentence and pronunciation. But later on, Professor Noam Chomsky, Noam Chomsky is the most important linguist in the field of linguistics, and he is the equivalent of Einstein, Albert Einstein, for mathematics. Well, for us in linguistics, is Professor Noam Chomsky. And later on, he broke the paradigm of behaviorism, because what Professor Chomsky argued at the time is that we have a mental representation of language, what he called the universal grammar. And basically, universal grammar was the notion that we already have a biological endowment to learn a language, that we already have the ability, the capacity to acquire a language, and we couldn't just learn a language by repeating sentences. That was not how children are learning. And also, if we were to actually learn from these perfect sentences, then we will not be creative in the way we speak. Then we will only be able to produce those sentences like parrots do, and there will not be creativity. And one of the characteristics of human language is that we are creative in the way we speak. We can create sentences that nobody else has said before. Later on, also, Professor Chomsky debunked the notion of behaviorism, the paradigm on behaviorism, by a term that he also brought to the table, which was called the poverty of the stimulus. And the poverty of the stimulus basically said that it will be impossible for us to teach a child every single possible sentence that we could come up with. In fact, we rarely spend time with children giving them sentences, perfect sentences. They just seem to acquire language on their own terms. Eventually, they start speaking a language. So that notion of the poverty of the stimulus was a very strong argument against behaviorism. So with that at hand, it will be easier now to move to the monitor model, because now that you can understand that the behaviorist would say that we learn languages by a stimulus response and by repeating all the sentences. And Professor Chomsky said, no, that's not the case. We have the biological endowment. We don't need to be repeating sentences. We already have the biological ability. And Professor Stephen Krashen came and said, well, you know, it seems that what we need is what he called at the time comprehensible input. In essence, we couldn't just put someone in another country, for example, and just have them listen to the language and expect that person to learn. So if I spoke to you Spanish and just spoke to you in Spanish, it will be very unlikely that you will pick up the language, that you would learn from that. So what Professor Krashen in the early 70s, when he was at the University of Southern California, argue that what is necessary is comprehensible input, and that is language that you can understand. What he argued was that we were able to learn a language when we understood the messages that were given to us. The messages that we were hearing would eventually be able to move to our subconscious, to our ability to speak without thinking about what we're saying, only when we receive this continuous language that we can understand, and that he referred to as comprehensible input. So that was a very important argument that he made. And today, if you read any book on second language acquisition, you will see that the concept of comprehensible input is widely used, and it's actually well accepted now that it is necessary to receive comprehensible input if we want to speak a language fluently. So that's something that is also now recognized as being very important in the process of second language acquisition, in the process of learning another language. Okay, so let's get to the meat of our conversation. Unless you're vegetarian, then we'll get to the potatoes of our conversation. And if you speak English as a second language, this is supposed to be a joke. In English, when we talk about the main point of something, getting to the main point, we say, get to the meat of our conversation, get to the meat of it. But just since language is so arbitrary, why not potatoes? So potatoes of our conversation. So that's supposed to be a joke. Okay, so let's talk about the monitor model. And basically, the monitor model had five hypotheses, the five hypotheses that explain how we should be learning languages. And those hypotheses are the acquisition learning hypothesis, the natural order of acquisition hypothesis, the monitor hypothesis, the input hypothesis, and the affective filter hypothesis. So let's start with the acquisition learning hypothesis, which is a very interesting hypothesis. And also, if you are learning another language, this hypothesis will make sense to you. You will be like, oh, wow, you know, like I can see that happening in my own learning process. And one suggestion I would also like to give you is that as I talk about the topics in our SLA podcast, as I talk about all of this information that we know from the field of second language acquisition, think about how it connects to your life, how it makes sense to you, how you can see it maybe in your own learning process, or even as a teacher, what you see in your students as you're teaching them a language, and see if the information that I provide to you can give you insight and can also help you understand what you're seeing and what you are experiencing yourself. So keep that in mind as I cover today's hypothesis. Just keep that in mind, how the information can connect to your own experience, to your own background, and that can enhance your understanding of the information that I'm sharing with you. So let's talk about the acquisition learning hypothesis. And basically, Professor Krashen made a distinction between acquiring a language and learning a language. Professor Krashen pointed out that in our brain, we have like these two modules that are interacting with language. And these modules process language differently. And acquisition is the part of your brain that puts the language in your subconscious, that holds your language in your subconscious. And it is what enables you to speak without having to think about what you're saying, without having to analyze what you're saying. Many of us, when we're learning another language, we think that we need to be thinking in our first language about what we want to say and then move that into the second language. Well, we don't do that in our first language. In our first language, we just speak. We just use language. And if you are a native speaker of English, and if somebody told you, wow, that was a fabulous unreal conditional you use with the past perfect progressive on one side and the conditional perfect on the other, you will be wondering, what in the world are you talking about? I have no idea what you just said. If you're a native speaker, you just know how to speak. You just intuitively know what you need to say. And of course, you say it correctly. You come up with the perfect reasoning, with perfect sentences. Professor Krashen described that information as the acquired language. It's the acquisition process that helps you to put language in your subconscious. On the other hand, Professor Krashen described learning as the conscious knowledge that you possess about language. For instance, this refers to knowing grammar structures or how you're supposed to put together sentences. So he will say that all these conscious knowledge that you can use when you actually stop yourself to think about this information is stored in like this separate module in your brain. And this module of learning and the module of acquisition don't interact with each other. And that is why we are unable to correct ourselves when we are speaking in real time and using language that is incorrect. And consciously, we know how to fix it. We know the answer, but because these two modules don't interact, because these two modules don't interact with each other, then what you know consciously is not really helping you when you're speaking in real time and you're not correcting yourself very rapidly as you produce the language that you're speaking. So in short, the acquired language is your natural ability to use language, what you have acquired, and learning is what you can use consciously. And they, according to Professor Krashen, don't interact in real time. So what you know, what you have learned from studying, that's not necessarily transferred to your subconscious. So that's what he would argue. And I'm sure that you can think of any experience you might have. And for me, it's very interesting because I speak Italian. And when I have a chance, I use my Italian with a private teacher in one of those platforms that enable you to take long distance lessons. And I occasionally record myself and just see how I am speaking. And I noticed something in particular, that in Italian, to say to eat, they say mangiare. So the verb for eat, to eat, is mangiare. In Spanish, the verb to eat is comer. So we have comer, Spanish, mangiare, in Italiano. So, and I know the word, I have no doubt what the word is. And also, I know well how you're supposed to conjugate in the second person singular in Italian. So if I say, in Spanish, we'll say, tu comes, and in Italian, tu mangi, with the E, mangi, tu parli. So that's how you conjugate. So as I was listening to my conversations, I noticed that when I was speaking Italian, I was taking the Spanish verb for to eat, comer, and I was using the verb in Spanish, comer, and then I was conjugating it in Italian. When you listen to the, when I was listening to myself, I was wondering, how in the world did that happen? That I know exactly how to say to eat in Italian, and I know how to conjugate it. Why is it that I am using the verb in Spanish? And there's actually some explanation for that. It's also from the inner language that it's will be another topic that I will cover in the future. It's inner languages, the process of language development in your brain. But if you have any experience or something that you can relate to the information, just think about it. Has this happened to you? Okay, so let's talk about the natural order of acquisition hypothesis now. And what this hypothesis describes is that we know that there is a sequence that happens in the way that we begin to acquire grammatical structures, that there is a predictable order in which acquisition takes place of certain grammatical structures. And one example that is widely used to talk about the natural order of acquisition is the comparison between the suffix, the ending ing, like when we say work, working, and the ending of the third person singular, which if you're a language teacher, if you teach English, you know that we need to add an S when we say she works, she eats. And we know from the studies on learnability theory and other theories out there that we acquire the ing at an earlier stage than we do the third person singular. And that's very, very interesting stuff. If you would like to know more about the developmental sequence, I can suggest one of my favorite books on language learning, which is How Languages Are Learned by Patsy Leibon and Nina Spada. I'll put the name of the book down below. And by the way, I'm not being sponsored or paid to recommend the book. It is honestly my favorite book. And if you are someone who doesn't have a lot of information on second language acquisition, it is a good book to read to get a general and good perspective on how we learn languages. In any case, the natural order of acquisition basically states that there is a sequence in the development of the language that we acquire, that if we try to learn how to use the S at the end of a third person singular, like she eats, she works, by studying and drilling that rule, we're not going to be able to put it in our subconscious. That is a natural process that takes place. And we know that the morphing, the suffix that we use for the third person singular, in other words, that S, is acquired at a later time. And because of that, Professor Krashen was suggesting that drilling and trying to memorize all of these grammatical rules were also useless. Now, let's talk about the third hypothesis, the monitor hypothesis. And this hypothesis goes back to the first hypothesis of acquisition and learning, the distinction between acquisition and learning. And what the monitor hypothesis states is that the learning module that you have, the information that you possess consciously, that you have learned consciously, only helps you as a monitor, as an editor, as a module that helps you correct, but it's not your information that comes from your subconscious. According to Professor Krashen, what you have learned has a very small role in your ability to speak a language. It is, like I mentioned before, like an editor. So as you are producing the language from your subconscious to be able to speak fluently, whenever you find yourself in a position that you need to think about what you're saying, you can use this editor to help you correct the language that you're producing. But the fact remains that when you want to speak fluently without thinking about the grammar rules that you're using. You're using the knowledge from your acquired language, from your subconscious. And the learning is only helping you to monitor what you are producing and helping you to correct those sentences if you have enough time to stop yourself to think about what you are producing in language. Now, the fourth hypothesis is the input hypothesis. And this is the most important hypothesis in Professor Scratchen monitor model, because with this hypothesis, he was offering an answer as to how we acquire languages. And what he offered in this hypothesis, what he offered on this hypothesis is that we acquire language when we receive a message, when we understand the language that is being communicated with us, and this message contains just a small fraction of new information that you can kind of understand from the context of the main message. This is what he called the input plus one. And that basically means that if I were to speak to you and you could understand 80-90% of what I am telling you in the language that I am speaking to you, then I will be providing the conditions for you to be able to process that language and move it into the acquisition module in your brain. So comprehensible input is central in Professor Stephen Krashen model. The ability to understand the messages that are being communicated to us that are just a little bit beyond your ability, that are a little bit beyond what you know, and that's how you can internalize the information. That's how you internalize the language, and that's how you eventually begin to speak, and language begins to emerge, begins to manifest coming from your subconscious. You would begin to speak when you are ready, not when you're being pushed to speak. The ability to speak at the beginning also would show that you don't have a good command of the grammatical forms, but with time, that would improve and would get better. And it's for this reason also that the monitor model is also known as the model that advocated for a zero grammar approach. Generally, if you read a book on second language acquisition, you'll see that they refer to the monitor model as the model that promoted a zero grammar approach. Because in fact, Professor Stephen Krashen would say that grammar can actually be harmful, that it will not be helping you to speak fluently, will not be able to help you speak from your subconscious knowledge, because he had already stated that learning is stored in a separate module and those two modules don't interact. Okay, so we're finally in the hypothesis number 5. A little bit of Monica in my life, a little bit of Erica by my side. Now let's get serious here. We're going to talk about the affective filter hypothesis now. And that's a hypothesis that if you think about it, it makes sense on its own. You don't even have to struggle to really know that this makes sense. And what the affective filter hypothesis pointed out was that in order for you to be able to process the language that you're receiving, to process the comprehensible input and create the right conditions for you to be able to move that information in your subconscious, it is important that you feel motivated. It is important that you feel self-confidence and also that you experience very low anxiety. Because what he would argue is that when you experience a high affective filter or high anxiety, then it will be difficult for you to allow yourself to open up the acquisition language device in your brains, in your brain, to be able to acquire the information that you are receiving. For that information to move from just your temporary memory to your subconscious ability. And for that reason, Professor Krashen strongly suggested that it is very important that we create an environment where students experience very low stress, very low anxiety, and also create an environment where students can also feel motivated and can feel self-confident, that they don't worry so much about maybe the mistakes they make, but that they can just feel comfortable and not be so worried and not be so anxious. And that would be conducive for them to be able to open up, to process the language and move it to the subconscious, to the acquired language. And it makes sense, right? I have myself been in classes where teachers call you on the spot, or they just throw something when you're not prepared, and sometimes you just feel very anxious and uncomfortable, and that makes the experience not just not conducive to learn a language, but very uncomfortable, and we don't like to be put on the spot. We already, if you think about it, at least in the United States, public speaking is one of the activities that produces more stress, that people are most afraid of. Now imagine having to be on the spot and speak on a language that you're learning. That can be a very stressful experience. So if you are a language teacher, keep that in mind. Keep that in mind to help your students feel more comfortable. Even if you are teaching just one-on-one, sometimes also we can do things that can make our students feel very stressed or anxious, and it prompts them to shut themselves down. For example, at some point I had a student who was taking a one-on-one class, and he told me that the teacher showed him some pictures and just out of the blue said, "Describe this picture to me." And he said, I'm not sure what to say. What do you want me to say? And the teacher was pushy and saying, "Well, just think of whatever you want to say. Just look at it and tell me what you see." And that's, my friends, very stressful. So there are other ways to teach students without putting them on the spot. So I hope this can give you perspective on what it's like also to be on the spot. Muy bien, my friends. We have covered the 5 hypotheses of the monitor model. I hope that you learn a lot from this hypothesis. And in the future, I am going to talk about the natural approach in a subsequent episode. I'm going to talk about the natural approach, which is the methodological approach, the methodological framework that came up from the monitor model and that Professor Krashen developed along with Professor Tracy Terrell. In the natural approach, they offer a perspective of what it would look like to learn a language based on the framework from the monitor model and what kind of techniques, strategies, and conceptual framework they would create to teach foreign languages based on the five hypotheses of the monitor model. So thank you once again for listening to the SLA Workshop podcast. I hope you learn a lot. And just before we wrap this episode, I just would like to encourage you to maybe listen to the podcast again, maybe twice or three times. I know that the first time you hear it, the information doesn't sink in, but as you listen to it again, it'll bring your own thoughts, because when you listen to it once and then you just let it sit, you start thinking about it subconsciously. And then when you come back, it can enhance your ability to appreciate the information that I share with you. So think about how this relates to your personal experience and how you could, if any, apply what you learn from the monitor model into your own perspective. And I'm not suggesting that you should adopt the methodology or conceptual framework, but think of the information in terms of how it can help you improve your ability to teach a language, how the information can also help you become a better language teacher or a better language learner. Thank you everyone for listening to the SLA Workshop podcast, and I hope to see you on the next episode of our podcast. And also, something that I would like to do is share the titles of the books that I use as a reference. And for transparency, I'm not getting sponsored or paid to promote these books. These are the books from my personal library. I have read every single one of those books, and I use them as my reference books. And whenever I need to look something up, that's where I go to double check it. So I'm going to include those titles on the notes for this episode, so that if you are very curious or if you want to buy something that you can read, you can have the reference for the books that I have in my personal library and that I use as my reference books. Thank you very much. It was very exciting to talk to you again, and I hope to see you on our next episode of the SLA Workshop podcast, because in the end, my goal is to help you become a better language teacher and a better language learner. So for now, I'll just say hasta pronto. Adios.
Thanks for listening to the SLA Workshop podcast with Joel Zárate. We hope you enjoy this episode, and we'll see you again on our next episode. And for now, we'll just say hasta pronto. Adios.